Consistent people beat inconsistent people, which is everyone. You must first become consistent before you can become exceptional. A lot of success comes down to sticking with something long enough to make the number of mistakes required to actually figure it out. Otherwise, you keep starting from zero, month after month after month, without ever making progress. No one cheers for you not drinking for a day, not smoking on a long drive, or not overeating for one night. No single workout or meal is going to be impressive on its own. The reason so few people understand success and becoming successful and getting to where they want to go is because consistency never looks impressive in the moment, only at the end. If there's one muscle that you can flex, it's learning to do the same thing over and over again. Like one of the values that we had at Gym Launch is do the boring work, because boring is what makes you rich, right? It's writing the follow-up sequence to the purchase page that you don't feel like doing, but you know you should do. It's running the split test for the 10th time. It's actually going through and prepping for 20 minutes before you have the meeting, because it's amazing how much smarter you can appear with 20 minutes of preparation. Like, you can appear 50 IQ points smarter if you just prepare for meetings for 20 minutes.
Consistency is the rarest of traits. And I think the reason it is so rare is because you cannot observe it without at least having some level of consistency. Think about that for a second. How can you observe consistency? It's very hard to do, right? You can't see somebody coming, like, you have to be at the gym every day to see someone at the gym every day, which is why, like, when people come to acquisition.com, all of a sudden they get this gigantic boost in their skill set, their productivity, their output, because they're around everyone. Like, when you show up at acquisition.com at 5:30 in the morning, the parking lot's full. Like, we're here to win, not play. We want to win. And so I think I would ask yourself the question, if I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that if I could do 100 times more than I'm currently doing, I would hit the goals that I have, then I would then ask the question, great, what resources are required? And then following up to that, is it worth it? And if the answer is yes, what's stopping you?
This is all to say that no matter where you're at in your journey, you've just got to believe with all your fucking heart that you're going to make it, because no one else is going to believe for you. Because you can never expect someone to invest in you more than you invest in yourself. And the crazy thing is, some people say they'd kill for a shot or they'd die for a chance, when in reality, they won't even wake up 60 minutes earlier for it.
This one's near and dear to my heart, because I was told my whole life that I was unbalanced, that I was too extreme, that I was too hardcore, that I was too all in, that I was too obsessive about everything. And I honestly had to fight to be me. And I'm making this because it's not common to be unbalanced. It's more common to be mediocre. Like, the people who obsess about work-life balance tend to be mediocre at both. And so, like, if you want something, you have to go get it. It's like this entropy, like the world will try to drag you down and make you a part of it. It will try to dilute who you are. It will try to make you fit into the mold that they accept. And so, like, you have to be willing to be extreme to get an extreme result, because many of the goals and aspirations that you have probably are above average. Like, actually, if you look at it, you're like, I want to make $1 million a year. Fine. Guess how rare that is. You want to guess? It's not 1%. 1% 600K in the US. And if you're global, forget about it. So you want to make $1 million a year? That's not even a 1 out of 100 goal. It's a 1 out of 200, 1 out of 300 goal. And you have that goal and you think that somehow you're going to behave like the 299 and get there. It's not normal. It's unbalanced. You have to take unrelenting, obsessive amounts of action for a disproportionate period of time where you get zero reward for doing so. If anything, you just get disproportionate punishment for taking this, and you question your own sanity half the time, because you're like, am I just being crazy? Is it insane for me to have these aspirations, these goals, these dreams for my life? And everyone around you will tell you yes, because it's in their best interest, because it makes it your failure protects their ego. And so people demand success but refuse to work, right? They won't work weekends. People want opportunity but won't talk to strangers. People claim ambition but they sleep in every day, right? We're the result of our actions, not our aspirations. So many people have the same goal as you, but very few of them will do the same work as you.
It's not about doing your best. It's about doing what's required, because what's required might be better than your best is right now. But the good news is that your best can get better. All of the great things that have happened for humanity have been from
one man or woman who had an idea and just wouldn't let people shake it from them.
What's your downside? Shame? Shame is your downside? Someone wagging their finger at you saying you broke a rule that doesn't exist, that I made up to make you feel bad? Them. You're gonna die, and so are they. So get what you want.
I have failed more times than I've succeeded. And you might have 9 failures. My first 9 businesses didn't really amount to anything. 9. 9. As in the first one, spent time, fucking failed. Second one, this one will be different, fucking failed. Third one, this is the one. And then 6 more after that, right? I'm just painting this picture because, like, it's painful as shit because the whole time everyone is telling you, I told you so, and they're right. Today. But not forever.
Whenever I like, it gets really hard, and I just think to myself, like, why am I even bothering? Why should I even keep doing this? I just remind myself that this is where most people stop, and this is why they don't win. And so that's a quote that has helped me get through some of those, like, really tough times. It's like, well, do I want to win more than I want to fail? Yes. It's like, well, then this is a Trevor quote, is my editor and my closest friend. He said, well, whenever someone says they can't stand it anymore, he said, well, if you're alive, you have proof that you can stand it. And if you die, you won't have to stand it anymore. So you can always stand it. And I think that's a really powerful message. It's really simple. But like, if you are going through it, then you are going through it. You may be uncomfortable. It may be painful. You may hate it. But you're still here.
I want to be very clear. People think that I'm this unemotional or zero affect person. It's not true at all. Of course I feel things. The difference is, so what? Like, I can feel terrible and still do the acts that increase the likelihood of success. It's not trying to negate the fact that you have emotions or that you have bad feelings. It's about continuing on the path one step in front of the other despite that. And I think that the more you learn that your actions do not need to be equated to how you feel, the more these feelings can just be in the backdrop, and ultimately they make you resilient. The work you do is the only thing you control, and the person you become becomes the evidence of the work that you voluntarily subjected yourself to. And not only does that pain or that difficulty or discomfort make you better, it's also what separates you from everyone else. And whenever I do go through those moments, I do have these slight, like, crook of the smile, you know what I mean, crook of my lip that goes up, because I'm reminded that everything that I'm willing to tolerate and deal with is what everyone else who wants to do the same thing will be incapable of doing. If it's hard for me, it will be just as hard for somebody else. And I think for some reason, that gives me some sadistic pleasure that I will be able to keep moving forward.
If you are consistent and you have none of the other attributes, you still might be successful. He's like, it's very tough for people who are consistent to not be successful. And he makes an especially pointed point about consistency, because in my opinion, it's one of the most difficult of the virtues for humans to do, because we're so attracted to novelty. And so, like, I mean, I used to deal with this with, you know, people on their diets all the time. I remember I ran gyms. And so someone would come in and I would always ask the question, so have you been following the meal plan? And then they would say, yes. And so then I started changing the way I asked the question. So I'd say, out of the 21 meals that you were supposed to eat, how many of the 21 did you have exactly the way it was on the meal plan? And then they would be like, oh, I mean, at least half. And they would say it as though that was a mark of success. And right now the meal plan could be your content plan. It could be your showing up to work on time plan. It could be the time that you want to put towards your side hustle. It doesn't really matter.
You don't have to wait until January 1st to better yourself, because I think it's stupid to wait. Like, why would you wait on getting better? Why would you, like, if you had a lottery ticket, why would you wait to cash it in? You would cash it in as fast as humanly possible. And that lottery ticket is the life that you want on the other side of this. Why would you wait? Here's a harsh truth. You're young. You've got time. False. All that lie does is extend how long it takes people to realize tomorrow isn't guaranteed. Nothing is going to be easy. Get over it. It takes time to get good. And the sooner you start, the sooner you act. And the sooner you act, the sooner you get. And don't stop until you do. And as harsh as that sounds, I do have good news. It only takes 20 hours of focused effort to get decent at anything. The problem is people wait years before they start their first hour. So many of you could probably start achieving next year goals before the end of this year. 20 hours is not that long. If you're like, man, I really want to learn ads. I really want to learn how to make content. I really want to learn how to edit videos. I really want to learn how to sell. You can do that now and you can have that skill. There's this massive delay that people think because of the unknown. They don't know what is going to happen. And so they therefore assume that it's bad. And so the reality is that most people don't like surprises, even if they're good ones. Have you ever heard people like, oh, I don't like surprise parties? It's a fucking party. Why would you hate a surprise party that's in your favor? You hate it because you don't like the unknown. And so it's a really good thing to test for yourself, which is, why would I hate a good surprise? You hate it because there's a possibility that the surprise is negative. But on a long time horizon, you know 85-year-old you isn't even gonna remember it to begin with. Connections, money, looks, intelligence, those are all great. But you can beat someone with all of those things if they have only one trait, an insatiable desire to improve. No matter where they start, it's hard to beat someone who improves every second of every day without giving up. And this is why earlier I said, ambitious people buy skills and they pay for those skills with time and money. And in order to have the time and money to invest in those skills, they have to take them from somewhere else. Because the thing is that your resources are zero sum. And this is something that a lot of people aren't comfortable with. Whatever you choose to spend your time on, you take from something else. Whatever you choose to spend your money on, you take from something else. And so most people don't have a resources issue. They have a priorities problem. You are choosing to say that other things are more important. And hey, I wanna be real. If that stuff is more important to you, then amazing. You want it, life, congratulations. But if you don't have what you want and you're spending money to proliferate a life that is not the one you want to lead, then you need to shift the list to invest the time and money and pull from those things that you don't want to put more in the ones you do.
So imagine you're talking to the creator of the universe about the person that you wanna become. And so you say, you know, I wanna be courageous. And the creator replies, then I will give you monsters that terrify you. That way you can conquer them. And you say, well, I want to be patient. And the creator replies, then I will make you work harder and longer and nothing will come easy to you. That way you can learn to wait. Or like, okay, well, I want to be wise. And so the creator says, then I will give you failures that will crush your spirit. That way you can learn the value of judgment. Then you say, that sounds like a hard life. Can you give me a good life? And the creator replies, just like we measure the quality of a blacksmith by the strength of his steel, I measure you by what you are at the end, not the fire and the hammer that it took to make you. A good life isn't an easy life. A good life makes you into a good person. And that, my child, is a hard life. It's about who we become doing the work more than the outcome from the work itself. And I love this, and this is a reframing of Proverbs, but the work works on you more than you work on it. Like in all labor, there is profit. Meaning we always benefit from work, even if the thing that we work on gets destroyed, even if you went bankrupt, even if you know that relationship didn't work out, even if that partnership falls apart. The work you did is eternal because it changes you.
I've taken a lot of effort to try and operationalize emotions so that I can either get out of them or lean into them. So like patience, for example, right? I'm only bringing this up because I think it might be relevant to some people, is that most goals are attainable if you expand the time horizon, even enormous ones. Like you can do anything in 10 years.
You could walk to the moon.
You can do anything. And so for me, I would say a naturally impatient person. Like I tend to want things immediately now. And you know what? You probably are too. But once I defined patience as figuring out what to do in the meantime, it allowed me to control what I did. Because now, like you and I are being patient for your stock investments. Right now, as we're on this podcast, we're being patient for that because we're doing things in the meantime. And so whenever I felt impatient and wanted to change course, I had to just redefine what do I need to do today? And if you are sad and impatient, then it means that right now you need to learn what the option is that you need to go pursue. And then that makes it very much under your control. And so step by step, each of these emotions over time, I spent a lot of time trying to define them out so that they no longer control me and I know how to solve them. And then now it just becomes a faster and faster muscle. Like, oh, I feel anxiety. That means that I have many options that I don't have priorities. Okay, what's my priority? And then all of a sudden, what used to take days of anxiety and feeling this, you know, frog in my throat was just, oh, I need to make a list of all the things that I'm looking at. Which one's the most important? Ignore the rest. And then whew, I'm good. And what used to take days takes minutes.
The reason so few people understand success is consistency never looks impressive in the moment, only at the end. And so people only root for people who don't need it once you've already won. People are like, he's amazing, he's so good. But like, that's the last time you need it, the least. And so you always have to be the person who roots for you before everyone else does. And people struggle to do things alone because if everyone else were cheering you on, then it means that you're not in the right place. It means that you're just like everyone else, and that's not where you want to be.
I think anyone wants someone to go through pain, but I think that you want someone to grow. And think about the reason they call them growing pains. It's because as soon as you stretch past your potential, as soon as you get into an area that you haven't done before, it's uncomfortable. And so to get the adaptation from the extra stress, you have to have the extra stress to get the adaptation. And so you can beat 99% of people without being smarter or luckier, but by being willing to endure pain and uncertainty. That's a big one, uncertainty for longer. Because the fastest growth periods are often the most miserable. And so if you want progress, get used to pain. But if you want to earn $1 million, you have to endure $1 million worth of pain. And so I said there's two kind of categories there. One is the actual pain, and the other is the uncertainty. But the thing is a lot of the pain comes from the uncertainty.
Most of the biggest decisions in life are scary because you've already made all the easy decisions that you can make. The only way to make a hard decision an easy decision is to let life make it for you, which is what the vast majority of people do. Things that are obvious and not risky, you have already done. What's left are the things that are obvious and risky. These types of decisions involve trade-offs. What you're trading is being stuck for either getting better or getting worse. But you're making a trade and you're hoping that obviously it gets better.
Whenever I'm like complaining about something, one of the common things he'll ask me back is like, well, who do you want to be? And I'll be like, well, I want to be like this. He's like, do you think that person would not go through hard times? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, it sounds like you're wishing for the outcome, but not willing to pay the price. He's like, are you willing to pay the price? And I'm like, well, yeah. He's like, well, this is what paying the price feels like. Embrace it. Because these will be the stories you tell.
Losers fear rejection, winners fear regret. And most attempts fail of anything. Failure is literally a prerequisite for success. And one of my favorite quotes of mine is greatness rejects all first-time applicants. And so it's kind of like that person that just is like, oh, I can't get a job. And you're like, well, what have you done? And they're like, well, I applied somewhere. And you're like, what do you mean? And they're like, I applied somewhere. And you're like, And they're like, yeah. And I didn't get the job. They didn't even call me. And you're like, you went to one place?
Life doesn't fight fair, and neither does business. And so the thing is that you have to fight regardless. You have to fight nonetheless, and you have to win. And that means that whatever software you have to install, whatever belief system you need to have, you do whatever it takes.
Yeah, people don't know how to manage their emotions. I think the more, at least for me, the more I've tried to create space between how I feel and what I do, the more consistent my outcomes have been.
What do you mean?
So if I need to create content and I'm not feeling it, or I'm feeling tired or things like that, the more times I give into that excuse or that feeling, then the more superstitious I become about doing it in the future. Whereas a lot of times if I can just start when I am tired or when something is painful and then still execute about the same as before, I look at game tape or I look at video or look at the content from those sessions, for example, and I see that I remember feeling terrible during the session, but mm-hmm. you can't really see mm-hmm. anything. Mm-hmm. And I think the more times you get that loop going, the more you can separate how you feel and what is required. And the more times you do what is required to get what you want, the more times you get what you want.
You only need three things to win: the balls to start, the brains to learn, and the heart to never give up. And the best thing is, you already have all three. And so my ask of you is to make the commitment. Now this is, again, the elimination of alternatives. To make the commitment to never stop. And so it doesn't mean that I'm asking you to commit to be successful. I'm asking you to commit to keep running, to keep walking the marathon. Even if you have to pant and you have to slow down, you just can't stop. And so the best way to hit next year's goals is to not wait until next year to work on them. It's to start now. Because I'll tell you this, if you feel like you need a special occasion to begin making your life better,
then it assumes that a special occasion must always be there for you to want to improve yourself. It shows that you don't think today is worth improving. And so that means that you typically will always cast forward when you think things are worth improving. And so the easiest way to vote with your action is to make today the only day that is good, because it's the only day you have control over.
The more memories you have of hardship that you've been through, the more it stacks, the more it becomes a trait, the more it becomes ingrained in your behavior, and the more it takes to shake you, because you're like, well, this is my baseline. This isn't even close. It doesn't even register on my scale of something that's an inconvenience. We've all met that person where, like, if a call gets moved or a dinner plate is late, it's like a nuclear bomb went off, right? It's like, well, what's the opposite of that? Like, what's the person who, like, it doesn't matter if a nuclear bomb went off, but all you see is a straight line, completely undisturbed by the things that are going around them? Because you can beat 99% of people without being smarter or luckier, but by being willing to endure pain and uncertainty for longer. It's hard for you, it's hard for everyone else, and most people avoid hard things, which is why you can beat most people by just trying and continuing to try. And the main thing is that I think most people don't even know what trying feels like.
I had 9 failed businesses, 9, before I had one that really worked. And so I bring this up to say that, like, I don't know what failure you're on right now. Maybe you're on 0 failures, you're on 1 failure or 2 failures, but you have way more failures in you. At the end of the day, like, one of the big realizations I had is that since life is an infinite game, and what that means is that there are games where you have a defined time period and at the end you count the score. Right? And then there's infinite games where the only point of the game is to keep playing the game. And so, like, the point of marriage is not to get married, it's to stay married. The point of health is not to get healthy, it's to stay healthy. And the point of business is not to get into business, but to stay in business. And so basically the only thing that you have to do to stay in business is to choose to continue to fight. And so once you realize that, then you realize that you become a success the moment you decide you are, because being successful is far more about being in the game, about being in the arena. And so when you're in your 20s, what you lack in experience, you have to make up for in effort and hours. And believing otherwise leads to a life of honestly well-deserved mediocrity.
The bigger your goals, the more pain you're going to endure, whether you want to or not. It's the price. And if you can endure 4 times more pain than someone else, I don't actually think that it feels 4 times more painful. I think it feels the same level of pain, but you have this padding that makes it feel worth it. Give a man a purpose and the ability to achieve it, and he will crawl over broken glass with a smile. That broken glass, like, how can you have a smile during the pain? It's because of what the pain itself represents.
If you want patience, then you're not gonna get things quickly. If you want to have endurance, it's like you have to be able to tolerate suffering, right? If you wanna be wise, it's like you're gonna have to get burned. And you're gonna have to learn the value of judgment. And sometimes that means you're gonna get betrayed in order to learn that pattern. And so it's like we lament the price tag for the things that we want. And I think that, at least for me, my ultimate, you know, long-term goal is just to become the person that the best version of me, right? And I think that in order for that to happen, I will have to go through pain.
I didn't need to deserve success, but I could still have it if I did the things that created success. And so it felt like a cheat code where I was like, I can actually be a shitty person and horrible and suck at everything. But if I still work out and I still eat this way, I can still look this way, even though I don't deserve it. And that was like the first, it actually felt like, I was like, for anybody who hates themselves, you can hear me. That was like my first big shade, my first solace, my first foothold that I started getting on success was that I didn't need to deserve it. I could still have it anyways. And that was like very empowering for me.
We live inside of prisons of our own making based on our belief system. And so if you want to change your life, you have to change your belief system. Belief system is just a different way of saying things that you know or believe to be true. These are just the facts that you live on. Now, thing is we can't double check every single thing that we believe because we can't. It would take too long, right? As a human being, every single thing you had to fact check. So the vast majority of the things that we believe and take as true were just given to us by other people. It's what I find very interesting about this is that we are so hesitant to question our beliefs when in reality, almost none of our beliefs are our own. They're not yours. They're someone else's. And you've seen these people. He lost his job. He gained weight. And man, he's just never been the same. Pull your head out of your ass. I want to remind you that a lot of times what we imagine hard to be is different than how we experience hard, because the nature of hard changes too. And it's more of a limitation in how we describe hardship than it is. And I actually think there's a big problem with this. So just kind of like Eskimos have like 7 different words for snow.
I feel like I should have like 25 different words for hard, right? Like the amount of things that you go through, there's like lifestyle hard. Like, okay, so there's sacrifice hard of like you're giving up things that you enjoy. There's also like effort hard of like starting to do things that you hate doing that you're not good at. There's risk hard of the fact that you could lose something that you currently have, right? That you have the chance of losing what you currently have. You have the uncertainty hard of the fact that you might be doing all of the sacrifice for nothing. There's lots of different flavors of hard, and each one of them presents at different times. And for some reason, when it gets a new kind of hard, it's a new seventh type of snowflake hard, then you're like, oh, this is different. But it's not. It's just that the thing that you grow comfortable with, then you conquer, and then you're exposed to a new level. And so I love this quote from Paul Graham. He said, if you want to make $1 million, you have to endure $1 million worth of pain. Fundamentally, in my opinion, the people who end up building, not inheriting, building tremendous wealth, just have massive concentrations of pain. So don't go looking for the easy way, because it will never get you there. Failure and success are salt and pepper. They're married. One leads to the next. And so the idea is we want to get as many failures out of the way as fast as possible. And so it's like we want to pay down that failure debt, again, as soon as we can. And so the very tactical thing that I would advise is think about I don't want people to think that I'm a failure. It's actually not people. There's like two people that you hear their voice in your head. And so when you actually get really clear on whose voice is that. So when I was thinking about selling my company, the offer was for $46.2 million. And I was afraid that it wasn't enough to impress the people that I wanted to impress. And I had to figure that out. I was like, I don't know. I mean, is it worth it? Maybe I should hold on to it longer and grow more. And I went, you know, back and forth. And when I thought more about it, I was like, actually, there's only one person whose opinion I'm concerned about. And then when I named it, when I was like, oh, it's Tom? Tom's the person. And like, I'm not even that close with Tom. But Tom, my envisionment of Tom judging my exit as not good enough for their approval, I was like, wait, I'm letting Tom have this much influence over my life? That's absurd. And so one of the big reframes that I have in my head is that if you don't know why you believe what you believe, it's not your belief, it's someone else's. Mm. And so if you can't explain, like, why am I not doing this? If you can't actually explain it, it's because there's someone else's voice that is influencing you that you're not aware of. And so I try and
name it.
Yeah, the naming is the key part, because as soon as you see that, you're like, Tom? Is Tom's approval worth more than the dream that you want to pursue? And as soon as you get that, you're like, well, hell no.
Charlie Munger said, the money isn't made in the buy, and it's not made in the sell. It's made in the wait. And that like, I just feel like that's such an elegant way of thinking about it. It's like the hard part about the plan is sticking to the plan. Like, the plan wasn't bad. Your first plan was good, because it's easy to go say, I'm going to work out 3 days a week for the next year. And it's a good plan.
Pretty good plan.
It's a pretty good plan. And the interesting thing is that, like, a mediocre plan that's stuck to always outperforms an amazing and perfect plan that you never stick with to begin with. And I know this obviously from the fitness world, but it applies to everything. And so, like, the stick to it muscle is the one that you have to flex. And that's why, like, if you're going through things, you have, especially in the earlier days, like, I remember I used to start and stop, and I try this thing, I try that thing. It's normal, because you haven't been reinforced enough of sticking with something. Right. But the thing is, it's like you have to stick it out long enough that you get that first carrot, you get that first cookie. Yep. And then all of a sudden, everything that you did to get there, you're like, oh, more of that will get me more cookies. And that's and then it just becomes this self-perpetuating cycle. And then you get addicted to work. I think to myself, man, I'm afraid of doing this. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm afraid of what this person's going to think about me, because if I were to be able to fail in quiet, in complete isolation, then I wouldn't care. And then I think, well, what if I don't succeed in public? What do they think then? Nothing, right? They don't think about me at all. And so obviously that comes from the perspective of seeking to gain approval and attention from others anyway. So it's like, listen, if you're insecure, which everybody is, let's be real, you might as well use the insecurity to get something out of it, right? Like, one of my favorite things about entrepreneurship is, like, use what you've got. And so a lot of people think that they need to fix their conditions in order to get, like, the perfect conditions before they start. But the perfect condition is whatever one you're in, because it gives you whatever assets you have. That's the cards that you're dealt. And so you just play the hand. And a lot of people have great cards. It's like, man, I'm so afraid of, it's like, use it. It's like, I have nothing. What makes you very dangerous because you have nothing to lose.
It's not about the resources you have. It's about how resourceful you're willing to be. Right now, getting started is 100% under your control. And I love taking this frame, which is that every self-made billionaire is self-made. Now, if you're like, wait, there are billionaires who aren't self-made. Right, that's why I didn't say all billionaires. Every self-made billionaire is self-made. And every self-made millionaire is self-made. And here's the one people hate. Every self-made person in poverty is self-made. Now, that may make you feel uncomfortable. And you know what? You may be right. You probably did have more disadvantages. You probably did have things that worked against you. And now what? You're right. So that's it then for you. The rest of your life will never go the way you want it to go. The harsh truth here is, if you want to feel better, blame others. If you want to get better, blame yourself. You can say, you know what? You are right. Your dad kicked the shit out of your whole life and you don't have any confidence because he told you you're a piece of shit every day. You're right. But in order to be rich, you need to let that go. Because every day you say that I'm not successful because of this, it means because this now owns you. And for me personally, that realization that the thing that I hated most in the world, the things that I blamed for why my life wasn't the way it was, I was there. And just realizing that made me angry. But through that anger, I was able to say, well, fuck them. Like, I will succeed despite the fact that my dad said this or my mom said this. Despite that, despite the fact that the chips are stacked against me, I will still win.
I'd say one of the strongest mental frames that has gotten me through my hardest times is thinking this will be the story that I will one day tell. And that means the harder it is, the bigger the dragon, the more epic the story, and by consequence, the more epic the hero. And if you think about the difference between winners and losers, winners define themselves by what they made happen, and losers define themselves by what happened to them. And the difficult part of the lonely chapter is that the Rocky cutscene lasts 90 seconds in the movie and lasts 5 years in reality. There's this line that I heard David Goggins say, I'm David Goggins, bit. I remember him saying it, and I thought to myself, like, you want to be able to say that in the mirror to yourself and not laugh at yourself. Mm-hmm. And the only way that I can do that is know that when no one's watching, I work harder than when they're watching. And thinking about it like that has given me this persistent and ever-present scorecard or third party that's like, no one's watching, which means now you have to work because otherwise you're full of shit.
Your life every day exists as evidence that you can handle everything that has come your way. And I think that if you've ever had any need for evidence, let that be the greatest evidence of all.
One of the wildest questions that I read that, you know, kind of stuck with me was like, what would you do if you weren't afraid? And I think that's just such a powerful question to ask, because every person has the fear is the thing that gives you the 100 reasons. And what's really interesting about this is that our brains are exceptionally good at finding problems, which is why I'm a big fan of inverted thinking. So how can I think about all the ways to kill my business and then do the opposite? Your brain is so much better at spotting problems than spotting opportunities. And so it's like, use that problem finding thing and then just flip it. And it sounds like, oh, well, I would just think of the opportunities that way. It's like, it doesn't actually work. You actually have to think for the threats and then flip them.
I keep thinking to myself like, okay, well, if I was gonna get killed or Layla was gonna get killed or people I cared about were going to die if I didn't come up with another solution or if I made the thing that I wanted to have happen, what other things would I do? And usually it's a lot more. Whatever way you have to unlock that level of trying, that level of effort, like most things are hilariously easy to do. It's just more easy. It's easier to just do nothing. Most people do nothing and get nothing and are dissatisfied because their expectations that they would get something for that nothing of work. What's crazy is that the highest levels of effort are so rare amongst people that you can unlock most things in the universe with it by just really trying like your life depends on it. Because it does. Most of the time we know what we're supposed to do, we just have trouble doing it. Like, you know what you need to do to get a six pack. You know what you need to do to build muscle.
People already know this. Like, you don't need to know anything about training to do that. You just stop eating crap, maybe eat some protein, and add more weight to the bar over an extended period of time. That's it. That's all it is. You know that already. And yet you haven't begun because you haven't really tried. Like, it's hilarious to me. It's apparently rarer to have a six pack above age like 30 than it is to be a millionaire. If you want to achieve a goal, you're either going to have to accept boredom or pain. And the bigger the goal, the more of both you'll get. When I started my gym, I actually lived with six other people in one house. The thing is like, I was doing that when I was making like 20 grand a month take home. There's always trade-offs. And the trade-off for me of living in that condition was that I could invest in the dream and build the business that I had at the time. Now, I could look back because I ended up losing everything, you know, a few years later. You know, you get this negative cycle of like, all of that suffering was for nothing. But it wasn't for nothing because I learned all these skills along the way. You also can't operate from the perspective of like, I might lose it all in the future, which means everything that I do today is not worth anything. Because like, you're gonna lose 100% of everything the moment you die. So trying to say that you might lose something in the future is a reason not to do something is ridiculous. You're gonna lose everything at some point. You cannot wish for both strong character and an easy life because the price of one is the other. When I think about pain, I think about what thing am I paying for right now? And is that thing something that I want? And if so, it reframes the pain as the price of the thing that I want. Winners write history. But here's the cool part, is that if you win and when you win, you get to have a revisionist history of your own life. Like, you can basically rewrite your own history so that you can make it whatever you want.
And it's because you have to understand and respect risk. The beauty of it is that after you fail, the likelihood that you're successful goes up, not down. This is the part that people miss. They fail and think it somehow decreases the likelihood of success, but it actually increases it. And so it's like, you want to just get the failures out of the way. Why would you not want something that increases the likelihood to hit your goal? And the reason that it increases that likelihood is that failure is a requisite probability for taking action. And so anyone who has failed has taken more action than someone who's done nothing, which means it increases the likelihood that they are successful. And so when you fail, you get feedback. And when you get feedback, you get better. And when you get better, it increases the likelihood you win.
The more you do, the more you realize you can do. And so it's like you prove to yourself in some way that you get a positive reinforcement loop that like, if I spend an extra 50% longer on this, I get even more positive feedback. And so in some ways you could say that I've just become addicted to that loop, which is that the more obsessive I become about anything, the more positive feedback I get on a longer time horizon. And that's the part that most people struggle with.
One of the difficulty is, especially the vast majority of successful people have one thing in common, which is they're consistent. And consistency, you cannot see in a snapshot. You can't see consistency in a soundbite. You can't see consistency in a reel. And so consistency is one of those things I think you talked about, unlearnable lessons. I think they are difficult to learn without large amounts of exposure. And so I think those are the types of lessons that become unlearnable, is that you need large amounts of exposure in order to encapsulate the lesson itself. And so trying is one of those.
I had a mentor way back when I was starting my gyms, and he was like, yeah, we do flyers. That's how we get customers. So I was like, okay, so I'll do some of those. He said, you should try that. So, you know, print out 300 flyers, and, you know, advertising was expensive and I was broke. And so 300 was the appropriate amount of advertising that I could stomach. And so we put out 300 flyers and I waited. And then the next day I got a call. I was real excited. And as soon as I pick up the phone, I was like, oh, hey. And it's like, I got one of your flyers. I was so excited. And he says, yeah, you dinged my Mercedes. And I just immediately panicked and hung up the phone. I didn't even say anything. Thankfully, he never called back, but that was the only call I got from my 300 flyers. And so I called the mentor back and I was like, hey, you told me to do that, you know, think, you know, a decade plus ago, and way more entitlement. I was like, hey, you told me this was going to work. Right. And he didn't even respond to that. He was like, well, how many did you put out for your test size? And I was like, what do you mean by test size? He's like, well, what was the first batch that you tested on so that you could then scale it? And I was like, well, I mean, I put out 300 in total. And he just started laughing. And I was like, why you, I'm having this very serious moment. You know what I mean? I was like, what are you laughing at? He's like, hard to know if anything works with 300. He's like, well, we test with 5,000. He's like, and then if we get 0.5% back, he's like, then we're okay. 1%, I'm scaling to the moon. 1.5, he's like, I'm singing praises. He's like, if you had 0.5% on that, he's like, you'd get 1.5 people. He's like, and that's tough to see with 300. Can't really know if anything's working. And I remember thinking that moment, like, I might have been doing the right thing, but I was not doing nearly enough of it. And I think that there's a lot of early on, and like, I think that story can apply to a lot of things, to early entrepreneurship. It's like, we can get disheartened by our first month of making content that we haven't made money yet from it. But it's like, not that you're doing the wrong thing. You just might not have been doing it either long enough or enough of it, which time is really just also a proxy for doing enough of it.
It's not your fault, but it is still your problem. You still have to do something about it, or you can just wait and say, you know what? I'm going to continue to not live the life that I want until I die. And everyone will be like, oh yeah, he had an excuse. That's why. Right? Is that what you really want? Is that people were like, yeah, he had an excuse. Like, that's it. Like it's a weird thing to want a permission slip for mediocrity, which is fundamentally what excuses are. You just want permission from everyone else to still get respect without the outcome because of your extenuating circumstances. And the thing is there's a ton of allure, but the only person who actually believes that is you. People might not along. The people who love you might say, yeah, you know what? You are special. You are a special snowflake. Your mama might still love you. But like, you're not going to earn anyone's respect. And I think you certainly won't earn the respect of the person that matters most, which is you. Because you'll always know that you could have done more, that you could have done better.
To get out of sadness, and I've been sad many times in my life, the thing that's helped me get out of it is realizing that a perceived lack of options is what causes sadness, not a lack of options, a perceived lack of options, which means that all I have to do is figure out what I need to do, and figuring it out becomes the option. And so then I have clarity on the one thing that I need to do to pull myself out of this moment of sadness, which is, oh, I just have to figure out what to do. And that is how I get, at least for me, have gotten out of my sadder periods.
You have to grit through that period where you don't know what you're doing. And this took me so long to understand, like, the not knowing part is the part that's hard, and that is where people give up. It's not usually the like, oh, I just need to work harder. Sure, there's some people who are weak and they just lose there. But most of the times when I talk to business owners, that's not actually where they lose. It's because they don't know what to do. And so they think, oh, I'll change my strategy. Rather than figuring out what to do is the strategy. And so most strategies do work. So I want to hit on this a little harder. One of the misconceptions about business is that there's this one secret thing, right? There's usually lots of ways to win.
But the thing is that it was a path, and I knew that me getting off of it literally meant that I had to forsake basically all the friends that I had locally in Baltimore because I came back home. Second, because all the guys that I knew who followed the same path, me stepping off that path is almost me, it's like unspoken talking about the path that they're still following. And I think that's the really nasty one, is that if you start doing something different than everyone else is doing, they assume that you're attacking them for living their lives out. I don't know why people do this, but they do it. And so a lot of ways they want you to fail because they want confirmation that the path that they're on is the right path. And they want you to fail with the risk that you choose to take because it confirms the fact that they shouldn't take the risk that they weren't willing to take. And so don't be upset when people have these snide remarks. It's because they're actually protecting their own egos. It took me a lot longer to figure that out. And so just reminding myself that, like, hey, I've been able to boil down almost all criticism from other people in my life to this statement. So please listen to it carefully. You do not live in a way that I would prefer. That's all it is. Every single remark, why are you doing this, blah, blah, blah. It just comes down to, you live your life in a way that I wouldn't prefer. And the answer to that is, of course not, because it's my life. You should live your life in the way that you prefer. Why should I live my life in the way that you prefer? That makes no sense. But as soon as I got that translation, that reframe, it somehow just like, it was like the volume of the world turned down for me. Oh, okay. Why aren't you going to be at this guy's, the fantasy football thing? Why aren't you going to go to this destination? Why? I was like, dude, I'm trying to save money. I can't afford that in time. I can't afford that with money.
But when I was poor, I was pretty happy. I was okay with being poor. And now that I am rich, I'll put quotes on that, it's about the same. And so then it just goes down to, well, then the richness had nothing to do
with the level of contentedness, which means that my wants in past and present and future all go into the bucket of irrelevant in terms of their ability to affect my perception of reality in the present. And so in thinking about that, it makes my wants have less stake today. And so a lot of anxiety that I think a lot of people have is around things that haven't happened yet, either good or bad. Like, I hope this speech goes well, or I hope I get this job promotion. But the reality is that once you get the job promotion, you wanted it, you resettle. And the negative version of this is, and you've probably seen this stuff, but when handicapped people get handicapped, so they have a terrible accident, they get paralyzed or they lose a leg or whatever, there's a dip in their subjective well-being. But after 3 to 6 months, it typically restabilizes, which means that if I didn't get paralyzed, or even if I did get paralyzed, I'd be just about as content as I am right now. It's like, whatever is about to happen is probably not as bad as that. And so that's the worst case scenario, which is nothing. So, okay.
Good things aren't as good as you think they are. Bad things aren't as bad as you think they are.
Yeah, life is life. When things are really good in business, I'm typically suffering because growth pains are painful. If things are plateauing, I'm usually suffering because plateaus are painful because you don't know, like, why are we stagnating? What's going on? And if you're declining, it's really painful. And so it's just like life is painful.
Nothing exceptional takes little time. Like, great work takes great struggle. Because if it were easy, then it means it's low-hanging fruit. And if it's low-hanging fruit, other people have already done it. And it's the high fruit that take the ladder, that take the climbing, that take getting cut by thistles and leaves and whatever, that's still there for the picking. And the thing is that, like, most of the big wins in life come from the hard-to-attain fruit. And the key to most of those treasure chests is actually right in front of most people. It's just that there's just a time clock on the treasure chest. The key's sitting on top of it. It says, wait 5 years, and then you can unlock. It's in plain sight. It's not a secret. It's just the thing that makes it hard is not the complexity, it's the consistency.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.